John Batchelor with Jonathan Schanzer of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Eventually all wars become one is a proverb from the 19th century. Is it happening in the 21st? Reported in Moscow in conversation with Vladimir Putin, a man named Shara sometimes Shara, when he's put on a suit and made a speech before the United Nations General Assembly. But he's in Moscow with an enemy of NATO, with an enemy of the United States, with an enemy of all freedom-loving lands right now. Why? Do we have any clue as to why Shara would throw away all the good graces he built up and sit with Putin?
Well, John, it's an interesting question, but you've got to remember that the Assad regime played host to the Russians. There was a deep water port on the Med. There were bases throughout the country, you know, Wagner group fighters and Russian advisors and Russian air defense systems throughout the entire country. This was a significant outpost for the Russians in the Middle East. You'll remember that Vladimir Putin swept in after the United States failed to enforce its red line after the use of chemical weapons in Syria. And when Assad gassed his own people. And so now what you have is these remnants of Russian influence and Russian military scattered throughout the country. It had all collapsed for Putin. At one moment, it looked like all was lost. Ahmad al-Shara, Abu Muhammad al-Jolani, whatever you'd like to call him, he understands that he's got some leverage as it relates to the Russians right now. He can potentially lease land to the Russians. He can make purchases. He can demand a certain amount of weaponry be delivered to Syria if that might serve as recompense for the reestablishment of some of these bases and ports. So there's a lot for these two men to discuss. I don't know if this is an indication that he is wooing the axis of aggressors, as we would call it, the Russians and the Chinese, certainly not the Iranians, doubt the North Koreans, but he may be going to some of these alternate powers to the United States. I think it will be seen as a slight to Donald Trump, who lifted sanctions on this regime. But I do think also that it makes sense that al-Shara would be speaking to Putin about the assets that the Russians left behind with the fall of the Assad regime.
Is he sitting with Assad in Moscow? Would Shara do that?
Highly doubt it. But, you know, one never knows. Maybe there are things that he can pick up from Assad in terms of trying to ensure stability or continuity. I can't imagine, though, that Bashar al-Assad will want to sit with the man who deposed him.
However, Putin might want to put them together. Assad represents the Alawites and the diaspora and the enforcers. And Shara represents the United Nations. In other words, I'm trying to imagine what Russia sees as its advantage here. You've already outlined territory, but why not? They've got the exile in Moscow. Why not use him in some fashion? Shara doesn't have a peaceful land. He has a fragmented land. You know this very well, Jonathan.
He does. It is fragmented. I think the only question that I would have in response to yours is, does Putin actually care about stability or continuity in Syria? Does it actually matter to him? Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. It's unclear to me what this man actually gets other than the return of Russian outposts. I don't know if he cares how stable the country is as long as he gets to maintain the ability to sell weapons to the rest of the region, to have the ability to take Russian ships and to dock them at a warm water port. These are the sorts of things that I think are primarily on his mind, but perhaps there's something bigger afoot, as you suggest. I have not yet seen any breadcrumbs that would lead me to think that this goes beyond just his most immediate interests, which is not losing the assets that he placed in Syria well before the collapse of the Assad regime.
Tehran, snapback is in place. That means zero processing, zero. That means where is the fissile material that was supposedly buried or destroyed in the B-2 raid? Is that going to be enforced?
I think the snapback is enforced. And there's an unequivocal message right now from the Europeans, the United States and others in the international community that there is no more tolerance for an Iranian nuclear program. Now, the question is whether the Iranian regime abides by this, whether they care. They are saying right now that there is no reason to negotiate with the West, that they believe that the United States is operating in bad faith. They are saying that they still have the absolute right to enrich and to pursue its nuclear program. I think that it's a huge mistake on their part to dig in their heels in this way. But I think that they are still on a collision course with Israel, John. We are hearing that the Israelis are talking about the possible need to strike again, perhaps sometime as soon as 2026, because the regime continues to build back up its ballistic missile capabilities. They're looking to reestablish their air defenses after they were destroyed. And yes, they may be looking to enrich uranium again. They don't have a lot of infrastructure. That is thanks, of course, to Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump, who in tandem weakened that program significantly. But the regime has not said uncle yet. They have not agreed to end the program. This is why the snapback sanctions are in place. And this is why the Israelis are still thinking about possibly another go in Iran.
Jonathan Schanzer, Executive Director, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,